Our relationship with China is certainly a very complicated one and getting more complicated by the day in this globalized economy. So achieving change in that country will likely come at a cost to Canadians, in that case, particularly our athletes. Now, my next two guests bring very different points of view to this issue. Charles Burton is a political science professor at Brock University and a former Canadian diplomat in China. He's been influential with this current federal government. He believes that Canada must not be shy to openly criticize the Chinese government, no matter what the cost. He'll be joining us in just a few minutes, but first I'm joined by Dr. Paul Evans, who's the co-CEO of the Asia Pacific Foundation of Canada. Thank you for joining me, Dr. Evans.
Great pleasure.
Now, first, let's talk about your point of view on this. If we boycott the Olympics and we make a big noise about what's going on in Quebec and we find a whole bunch of different venues to do that, will it achieve anything in terms of our relationship with China?
I think China is aware that Canadians are and world citizens are looking at what is taking place in Tibet and that there's increased sensitivity in Beijing on it. A boycott would very likely be counterproductive. It would not advance the kind of agenda of human rights that many would like to see move forward.
Counterproductive how?
Well, I think you're going to get, if a boycott were put in place, it would produce all kinds of backlashes in China. Nationalism, xenophobia on the outside, and a particular anger at Tibet in particular. So that at this stage, it's bad politics and it's bad sporting culture to even consider a boycott. Other things are more useful.
Charles Burton is with me. Thank you for joining me, Mr. Burton.
Hi.
Talk to me about specifically a boycott of the Olympics in China. Would that achieve anything in your view?
Well, I think that there is some talk of boycotting the opening ceremony, and I would think that it's unlikely that our prime minister and other world leaders will feel that it's a good idea to be engaging in a celebratory event with the Chinese leadership at the time of the Olympics. So I imagine that a lot of people will not be going to that event. But I do agree with Paul that if there was a boycott, that it would have a big impact in China and probably lead to a lot of resentment of the West, because there's a perception that, you know, the West supports the Dalai Lama, and the Dalai Lama is promoting disorder in Tibet. And so it could lead to various kinds of retaliations, even economic retaliations, considering that China holds so much U.S. Treasury bills and debt, which could, you know, wreak some havoc on North American economy.
Now, despite that, Mr. Burton, you have been very supportive of government action to publicly criticize China, in, you know, finding other ways to make that criticism felt.
Yes, that's true. I think we should speak frankly about our concerns. My main consideration is that we shouldn't be holding our tongues because we're concerned that it will affect Canada's trade with China. There's no evidence that that's the case. I don't think the Chinese link the Western concern with human rights and the bottom line of trade all that clearly.
Dr. Evans?
I think that Charles is correct, that there isn't a direct linkage between criticism of China and economic backlash. But I think the bigger picture here is that it is essential for Canada to have a comprehensive relationship with China. And I was delighted to hear Charles's comment that there might even be thought of having a prime ministerial visit to China in the near future.
Our prime minister has never been to China. Been prime minister, right?
Oh, he's never been to China in his lifetime, nor have several members of his cabinet. So establishing the deep personal relationships that allow you to speak with China about what you like and also what we don't like about the Chinese situation is, I think, the big picture here. We need a comprehensive relationship with China.
But how do we get deep personal relationships if we start off with criticism about things like their human rights record?
The president of France has been to China four times since he's become president. He's talked directly and bluntly with Chinese officials about environment issues, human rights issues, but he's also tried to engage them and work with them on a range of issues. So you establish a relationship before you criticize, and then all kinds of things can be said and done.
Charles Burton, has Canada gone wrong in our relationship with China? The Prime Minister hasn't been there for a visit. We've been quite critical of China. Is there something else that we should be doing to make sure that we can cement a relationship with that country?
Well, I think that it's unlikely that the Prime Minister will be going in the near future in light of what's been going on in Tibet. I think that just I don't think Canadian people would support that at this time. But we'll have to see how this develops in the days ahead. I do agree with Paul that it's important to engage the Chinese side, and I think that we should be paying more attention to our relationship with China. And so I hope that we can, in fact, try and establish some kind of basis for deepened collaboration. But it's important that in the course of that we don't find ourselves supporting Chinese government agendas which are not consistent with the Canadian values and the Canadian way. So there's a fine line to be drawn here. I do think that Paul's right. The President of France has been quite successful in terms of maintaining the prestige of France, and on the other hand, giving China the kind of attention that it deserves as a great and powerful country and economy.
But Mr. Burton, if the French can criticize China and still have meetings, why is it that the Canadians can criticize China and not get meetings? I noted in a piece in the Globe and Mail, Campbell Clark's piece recently, he says, the Deputy Minister of Foreign Affairs spent 3 days in China last November without being able to get a single meeting with Chinese counterparts.
I don't think it was really a question of that Mr. Edwards was being shunned by the Chinese. I think it's really an issue of, do we have things to discuss with them that they want to take time out to discuss with us? And I think the purpose of Mr. Edwards' visit at that time was primarily to visit the embassy and see what's going on there. And so I don't take it anyway as the Chinese government snubbing us, and certainly they didn't give any indication that they were avoiding meeting with Mr. Edwards.
Paul Evans, was this a snub?
I think that the visit was a symptom of a problem where we have not been able to have high-level discussions with Chinese officials in almost 2 years, neither at the prime ministerial level. We have different ministers visiting China. David Emerson has made several very successful trips. But at the level of the high-level bureaucrats, at the very highest level in our system, we don't have the synapses, those kinds of connections with China that we did a couple of years ago, and it's important to rebuild them.
So what are we doing wrong, Paul?
I think that the formula of cool politics, warm economics is unsustainable in dealing with a great and global China, and that what we need is high-level connections that are able to discuss the good, the bad, and the ugly with China, but that we need a comprehensive framework that involves our top bureaucrats, that involves our political officials in Ottawa, and that ultimately has to have our prime minister involved in a relationship that's second only to our relationship with the United States.
Coming up, we'll have more on this issue of China and the complexity of our relationship with that, what is clearly a world superpower. We'll talk more to our guests about how we can unravel that or perhaps put it back together. This is Christy Clark here on the Chorus Radio Network.
Saturday morning at 10, CKNW presents House Calls with Dr. Art Hister.
This is Dr. Art Hister reminding you that you must listen to House Calls this coming Saturday at 10:07 a.m. right here on News Talk 980, because our topic is going to be one that's going to interest a lot of you, the many issues and the many facets of women's health issues.
House Calls with Dr. Art Hister, Saturday morning at 10 on CKNW News Talk 980.
Who's a professor of political science at Brock University, a former Canadian diplomat in China, and Dr. Paul Evans, who's the co-CEO of the Asia-Pacific Foundation of Canada. Now, let me go back to you, Mr. Burton, if I can. When Canada makes its voice heard on human rights, and I'm thinking about things like the Salil case, he's a Chinese and a Canadian citizen who's being held in jail in China, we haven't been able to even send our consular people in to visit him. Is that because we've been critical of China and its human rights record?
I don't think that the Jalil case is in any way a retaliation for statements the Prime Minister may have made. You know, the Chinese also want to get someone back to China that we have here in Canada, Mr. Lai Changxing, who's a resident of your city, and that hasn't been possible either. So I think that we would like Mr. Jalil back. It's a difference of opinion between the Canadian government and the Chinese government as to his citizenship. He traveled on a Canadian passport, but the Chinese government say because he left China illegally that he is not a Canadian citizen, he's a Chinese citizen, and because they say he's a Chinese citizen, they're not giving us any consular access. And I would say that, you know, with regard to our contacts with China, in addition to the visits by Mr. Emerson, if I'm remembering correctly, we've also had visits by the Foreign Minister, Peter McKay. We've had Minister Clement of Health, who negotiated a number of important agreements relating to health standards and, you know, safety of medicines coming out. And I'm trying to think who else. Oh, Jim Flaherty, the Minister of Finance, has also been to China. So it's not as if we're not having contact. And certainly, you know, in talking to my friends who are working in the Canadian Embassy in Beijing, they still claim that they're very busy. And so with different visits from Canada to China. So I don't think the situation is quite as depicted in the sense that, you know, there's not enough going on and we're not interacting with China.
But it is a far cry, though, Mr. Burton, from the days when we had these high-flying Team Canada missions that would go over on a regular basis that Mr. Emerson, of course, was a big part of making happen back in the day.
Yes, that's true. I don't think that we found that the Team Canada approach has worked as well as it was putted to do. You know, a lot of those agreements that were signed when Mr. Krechen was going in there like clockwork every second year didn't actually lead to the deals that they are purported to. And so I think that the current government just doesn't want to take that kind of approach. They don't think it's an effective use of resources.
Dr. Evans?
Real question is whether you can have the kind of relationship you want with China that is driven at the ministerial level, as successful as ministerial visits might be, when virtually every country in the world is sending its head of states in establishing direct and regular relationship with their Chinese counterparts. And so effective ministers are part of a picture, but the question that's in front of us now is whether we have to have involvement with China at the very highest levels to make progress, not just on some human rights files, but whether we're going to be able to make progress in working with the Chinese on a range of global issues. And there it is clear that we have been impaired in having the kind of access and contacts that we need, for example, on discussions of issues like Darfur and the Chinese involvement there.
So what do we do then, Dr. Evans? We swallow our pride and say, hey, listen, we're not going to talk about human rights.
I think to the contrary, we talk about human rights, we talk about Canadian values, and we talk about a range of other issues with the Chinese. We have to have a comprehensive approach. No single part of the relationship, whether it's economics or human rights or global issues, can dominate. It can't be a one-trick pony. We need a broad, comprehensive approach. And getting Mr. Harper deeply involved in China is important. There have been some signs recently that his government is warming up the politics a wee bit. Tibet has been very difficult for this government and many others. But there are some signs that the desire for that comprehensive relationship is alive and well again.
Now, one of those signs, Charles Burton, are the comments from our foreign minister, Mr. Bernier, where he said that the government supports a one China policy. Now, a one China policy means that, you know, from my layman's interpretation, that we support Taiwan and Tibet being in Chinese hands. Isn't this a big change for the government?
I think it is different from past policy. In the past, our policy was that we didn't have a view on the status of Tibet. Subsequently, the government of Canada made statements to the effect that they regarded Tibet as part of China's sovereign territory. So we've changed a bit there. But this one China policy is different from the language that we used when we established diplomatic relations with China, which is when we said that we took note of China's position that Taiwan is an inalienable part of the territory of the PRC. And so we simply took note of this, but we didn't feel that it was correct for Canada to to have a position on a matter which is really an internal affair between China and Taiwan. In other words, the way it's resolved is, you know, Canada is not, didn't have a position on it that they were, that Canada was prepared to articulate. The new policy under Mr. Bernier is very much opposed to the Taiwan referendum on whether or not the people of Taiwan want the government of Taiwan to apply to join the United Nations under the country name Taiwan. And so this is a qualitative difference in our approach to this issue.
Well, would it be fair to call it a flip-flop? You've got the Prime Minister meeting with the Dalai Lama, making the Chinese angry, and, you know, a few years ago, and now saying, among other things, his foreign minister saying that China has a right to remain in Tibet. Mr. Burton?
Well, he didn't say explicitly that. I don't think the Tibet thing is a change as much as the shading of phraseology on Taiwan. And certainly the Chinese government, the New China News Agency, issued a press release that said that China applauded the recent speech of the Canadian Foreign Minister Maxime Bernier on Canada-China relations. And so the Chinese government is obviously very happy about what they perceive to be a change in the way that the Canadian government is approaching their stance on Taiwan and on Tibet. And in his speech, Mr. Bernier did make reference to this as impinging on both Taiwan and Tibet. And so, you know, it is a qualitative change. But he did say in the House that Canada does have concerns about the human rights situation in Tibet, and that we do urge China to respect the freedom of expression, freedom of association, and freedom of religion of Tibetans. So, you know, it's not as if we're giving China the sanction to treat people in Tibet in a way that we regard as not consistent with their international obligations to the UN human rights covenants. We're still not happy about it, but the Canadian government position is that Tibet is part of China.
Paul Evans, is a one China policy a big change for Canada in your view? And does it mean that the government's putting aside its expressed interest in being willing to criticize China's record on human rights and Tibet?
I think that Mr. Bernier's comments on the one China policy are really a reassurance measure, sending a message to Beijing that on the fundamental questions of Chinese sovereignty, that whatever our views are on human rights problems, that we respect Chinese sovereignty, particularly in the Tibet situation, where whatever one thinks of the human rights violations, Canadian government has been consistent that Tibet is an integral part of China. Taiwan's more complicated right now. And essentially, Mr. Bernier has made a little bit of a different, taken a little bit different approach. And what he's essentially said is that he's hinting that we view Taiwan as an integral part of China. And that has always been hedged in past, some ambiguity. So there's, I think, the irony of a government that has been pretty tough on some elements of China and has, in opposition, supported a Taiwan Affairs Act, is now going further down the path of Taiwan as part of China than any of its predecessors.
I have to end it there. Thank you, Charles Burton and Dr. Paul Evans. This is Christy Clark. You're on the Chorus Radio Network.